Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
The Quilted Bananas program plays every Sunday, 10 to 11am, with news, views and music.
A collective of presenters, advertisers, community events and discusses news of interest to lesbians, queer women and non-binary folk.
We have interviews about past and future sports and cultural events, politics, films, art shows.
The program is sponsored through the generosity of the Rural Foundation.
And it plays every Sunday from 10 to 11am on Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM.
Good morning. Hi and welcome to today's Quilted Bananas program on Access Radio 106.1, your weekly coverage of news, politics, activities, interviews, music for queer and non-binary folk. It's Sue and Fiona, that's me, on the show today, and we'll be talking about fandoms, what brings us joy and a lot more, and we'll play some music too. We'll have Sue on the line after the next bit of music, but before we kick off the show, we'd like to thank the Rural Foundation, who's a sponsor for Quilted Bananas Radio. The Rural Foundation supports rainbow communities in Takatāpui to flourish and pursue systemic change for future generations. You can find out more about the foundation at ruralfoundation.nz, and they welcome applications all year round. So if there's a theme for this week, it's about fandoms. And when Sue and I had a chat yesterday about what we might want to talk about, that seemed to be the kind of the common theme, I guess. So, you can tell I'm in the studio by myself today, can't you? I'm trying to calm down. I'm taking deep breaths. But first of all, we're going to have a song, and this is a song that features in the show that I mainly want to talk about and the fandom that I want to talk about. And all going well, this is We Can Be Everything by Baby Queen.
I was crying at a party, which is not unusual of me. I was sitting all alone, I heard somebody say hello. I looked up to see a girl, she said, what's wrong? I said, the world. She said, well, what's so bad about it? I said, everything about it. She said, don't be so defeatist. I said, well, don't be so naive. It's a simple fact that nothing matters, and life will go on in my absence. She said, a life devoid of meaning is a life of total freedom. I said, I don't get where your point is. My life is still completely pointless. She said, open up your somebody crying out beyond my silver lining. I said, why are you upset? She said, well, nothing makes sense. I said, hey, don't be so defeatist. She said, well, don't be so naive. It's been proven space is exponential, so this is all inconsequential. I said, if it's inconsequential, then there's infinite potential. She said, but what's the fucking purpose? It's all just still completely worthless. I said, open up your
don't you think?
It can be anything.
That was We Can Be Anything by Baby Queen, and that's from the Heartstopper soundtrack. So I'll be talking a wee bit about Heartstopper a little bit later. But first of all, I have Sue on the line, hopefully. Hello, Sue.
Hopefully. Good morning, everyone.
Hello, Sue.
Good morning, Fiona.
Hello.
If there's slurping or barking, let me know, because I'm sitting on my couch in my little airlocked room, because we have COVID in the house, but it's not me yet. But you know, you never know. So I've got the dog and the lounge, and my poor partner has the bedroom and
blankies. But you're feeling okay so far?
I'm fine. This is the trouble with COVID, isn't it? You know, what's COVID and what's hay fever at this time of year? So,
oh, my God, yeah, I know. It's terrible, isn't it?
So I've had hay fever since the pine tree started partying, and it continues through all the other things that throw out pollen around here.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully you stay well. And and I think you call it something. You don't call it COVID, do you?
No, it's a spicy cough.
That's right,
spicy flu, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, well, fingers crossed.
It's about the year anniversary since last time we got it, so I'm not sure whether it's a good or a bad thing. I don't know that it's something we really want to be having annually, but
no.
It's like it is.
Exactly, trying to avoid it as best possible. It's quite hard at the moment, though, isn't it?
It is. There seems to be quite a bit around at the moment.
Yeah. Well, hopefully your partner doesn't have too bad a dose and kind of sails through it, right?
Hopefully. She's a bit miserable today, but that's the way of things.
Oh, well, thanks for taking the time this morning to join me on the show and talk about fandoms. Normally, Sue and I talk in the studio together and do our mad dash into the studio after the previous show, but this time it was me doing the mad dash by myself. So, thanks for joining me from the couch.
And we make that mad dash that little bit harder when you've got a phone call, because It used to be really quite complex to do it, and if you did something wrong in the steps along the way, you'd have some poor sod sitting there and not knowing whether it's working, and we don't know whether it's working, and the only way you really find out is live. But
yes, and sometimes we listeners would get to hear quite a bit more music than they were expecting, because we were struggling in the back. But the good news is that Access have put in a new phone system. The paranoia that it won't work is still there, but I'm happy to say that you're coming through loud and clear.
We both suffer that anxiety still, but actually the system is much better.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah. What are we fans of today, Fiona?
Well, I think I've already divulged that what my fandom is, which is the Heartstopper universe, or as it may be known as the Osmanverse. That may be my own term. I've made up other terms in the past, like Servapocalypse and things like that, for other things that are happening. But this is the Osmanverse, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's called that generally. Yeah, and Sue. Oh, goodness me.
And my little watchdogs are doing their job.
Excellent, very good.
Yes.
And you're not. I think you have seen the first series. Is that right? From what I'm of Heartstopper on Netflix. Is that right?
I've seen the first series, and we've just finished a series, so that might be on the list for the next series.
Oh,
but then. And there's another round of Sex Education as well.
Ah, yes, I haven't watched Sex Education. But what's the other fandom that, well, I called it a fandom, but that's what it occurred to me. So what are you going to talk about as well, Sue, just to give people a sneak preview of our show?
So at the moment, I've got a couple of fandoms on podcasts.
Ah.
So, you know, if you haven't had enough time listening to podcasts, there's some more podcasts to listen to.
Well, what is the world but without great podcasts to listen to? I mean, including ours, obviously, as we ramble on.
And I quite often, you know, after I've done fandom on television, I go to fandom on podcast and listen to a podcast or a audiobook, just to sort of as a wind down before going to sleep. But quite often, I'll fall asleep during the podcast, so it'll start off, and then I sort of think, oh, there was that bit and that bit, but I don't remember any of the rest of it.
Right.
So one of mine is actually relatively perfect for that.
Okay. So do you want to tell us what it is then, Sue? I'm curious now.
So what podcasts have I got? Mm-hmm. I haven't started this one in the next series because I'm so excited to hear another one. The BBC has a Doctor Who podcast series called Doctor Who Redacted, and the first one of those was in full Technicolor queer. It was just lovely.
Really? From the BBC?
Yeah, from the BBC. And they didn't kill everybody at the end, or, you know, sort of get those
excellent
BBC cold feet and just ruin the whole thing at the end. Which they've done a few times now. They did that with Killing Eve, of which we will never speak again, because they even changed the author's ending.
I know, and that's another topic, actually, that I hadn't thought of talking about, but we could go into that a little bit if we get time today as well. Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah. I mean, yep, so they didn't kill anyone on this podcast.
And one of the groups, followers are sort of fan writers, so people who are writing off the back of a fandom, or as part of their fandom, which is kind of is an entertaining genre in its own right, and you know there's even been the old 50 Shades, I think, came out of a fandom, not that I'd hold that up as a piece of enjoyable fan literature, but you know, some of that fandom writing fan fiction comes off queer people where the maker of the program is just bailed on the fans.
Yeah, or even if they haven't bailed on the fans. I mean, I know, like one of the authors that I've talked on the show about before, Carrie Hunter, I know that she ended up becoming an author because she started off in fanfic with Stargate, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that sort of, left it to the groups, to the fans to fix some of those, and some they do. So, so the first of mine was the BBC Redacted. I can't comment as to whether the second one is, but I don't see it. If it's made by the same people, it's going to be It's going to be along the same lines, I would expect.
And for people like myself, and I'm embarrassed to say this, but for people like myself who as a child was absolutely kind of scared of the Daleks, basically, and keep on feeling like I should get back into Doctor Who because all of these interesting people keep joining the cast, and yeah, I guess I'm wondering, like, do you have to go right back, or can you jump into a particular doctor, or to kind of get immersed in this fandom, or at least to get a taste of it? Where would you consider that you should start with Doctor Who?
I think there's elements of the world that are of the world that's been built that are readily summarised, and they're not something that, you know, you have to watch the problem to at the program to figure out. That is the Doctor is from Gallifrey, that's the survivor of an advanced civilization of time travelers whose time travel machine was the TARDIS, is the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
And it had some technical problems that basically broke and he'd lost control of the way that it flew, or the doctor had lost control of the way that it where it would go. So any time it takes off, you never quite know where it's going.
Right, so that's why they can end up in all kinds of different places.
That's what,
and times.
Why they end up in all kinds of different places and time. But it also means that as the audience, you know, the kind of storyline is that there was that you never knew what they were flying into. So for the audience, it's new every time, or that where they were going. So there are a few recurring enemy or groups there would be the Daleks, which you obviously knew, the Cybermen.
Mm-hmm.
There's been disappointingly few recurrences of the Yeti and the Angels. So there's a number of these characters, or these types of opponents that he finds, but also others, you know, so there might be one-off groups of them.
Mm-hmm. And because the Doctor regenerates, right? Am I correct in saying that? And so what that means, because each time the TARDIS kind of starts goes to a new place or time, I guess, does that mean that you can jump into that and kind of you can join at different, you don't have to go back to kind of the early ones. You can definitely kind of just, you know, just talking about, you know, the various Doctors. I mean, I guess I know David Tennant and John Pertwee maybe, and it was off the top of my head here, and Jodie Whittaker has been the most recent one, and there's another new one coming as well, I know. So can you jump into one of those series from those particular Doctors, or should you start when a Doctor regenerates?
I don't even think you need to jump into a series. Generally what will happen is that there will be sort of mini-series within the series.
Oh, right.
And you can just about jump into the mini series. So they're kind of a strange mix of this sort of familiar characters some extent.
Because the Doctor normally has a companion, right?
Yes, normally has a companion or two. But they rotate around, so you know the characters and settings and Doctor from when it first started is entirely different from the characters and settings, and a lot of that gets driven, I think, by the actor that's playing the part. So you know, you've got a David Tennant Doctor Who versus Jodie. Name
Whittaker, Jodie Whittaker.
Doctor Who versus a Peter Davidson versus a Patrick Troughton.
Right.
So, in fact, you couldn't start watching from the beginning because there's very few remaining episodes of those. Of those early Doctors.
Yeah, because didn't they have a habit of kind of over-taping?
Yeah.
Some of the BBC did at that point. So occasionally you'll see these news articles about, you know, lost episodes having been found in somebody's garage or attic or whatever, right?
So I think some of the lost episodes or some lost episodes possibly of Patrick Troughton were found here.
Really? Wow.
Videotape was expensive and it was reused.
Yeah.
And some of it, and so I'm not sure how it was shipped out to the colonies.
Of course. Right, but so it certainly wasn't digital for download, was it, in those days?
So some of those have, you know, sort of popped out of various broadcasters' archives around the world.
There's
very few of those early versions. You couldn't go and find them.
I guess there are some. Yeah, exactly. And I guess there's also kind of, as well, comparing the modern day Doctor Who versus those older ones, where, you know, the special effects were much more kind of rudimentary, I guess, or very early days kind of things. So, yeah.
Oh yes, absolutely. But you know, that was in some ways part of the joy of it is that you know, the cheesiest special effects were kind of quite, I think in some ways they support the imagination component of watching. So, you know,
hence my absolute paranoia about the Daleks coming to get me.
Your absolute terror of the Daleks, which were, you know.
I'm not alone in this, by the way. I've read online about other people being scared of the Daleks. It's not just me.
Well, with good reason, yes.
So just, and yeah.
I think one of the things about Doctor Who that I've never realised really until very recently was that the music was, I think it's iconic. The original music of Doctor Who was really only replaced very recently, that they started to venture away from that. But actually, the original stands up extraordinarily well as a piece of very early electronic music.
And it was written by a woman, right? Sorry, I'm jumping into the exciting part.
I'm not sure whether it was written by a woman. So they'd had an outline, a written outline of the, you know, here's the theme. And everybody had sort of looked at it and thought, no, you know, well, it's not really much to that. And Delia Derbyshire went home and built something. She built it, I think, in an extraordinarily short time, which, given the technicalities of you know, that it was a physical process to build that sort of electronic music, that involved tapes and cutting and running different tapes over each other and speeding it up and slowing it down and filtering and so as a very early piece of electronic music, you can play that now and it stands up on its own. There was quite a body of work that she did. None of it is well known, but all of it is really quite elegant sort of electronic music at that time.
Yeah, and I have watched little YouTube clips, I think, of that early music as well. And complete disclosure, when I was thinking about Doctor Who this morning, I remembered, and I've just checked as well online, that just to confirm that it was true, was that I have the 45 of Don't Fight at Marsha, It's Bigger Than Both of Us by the Blam Blam Blam.
Yeah.
And on the B side is the Doctor Who theme done by Blam Blam Blam.
Which is pretty
cool, yeah. And they do a really good job of it as well. But just coming back to the modern day Doctor Who, I guess. Am I right in thinking that they have the series and then they often have Christmas specials? So are the Christmas specials, like they've got some coming up, I think, soon with David Tennant and the companion, whose name has completely gone out of my head all of a sudden, who is a British comedian. Am I right in thinking that potentially those specials, are they the mini series that you're talking about?
So if you've got a series, and the British series were, I think, somewhat shorter than the American series at the time, but you might have, you know, sort of 8-12 episodes in the series, and they would run through 3 or 4 stories in the series.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, the Daleks would appear in one, and Havoc would ensue in the next one, and then, you know, the Doctor would manage to defeat them in the third one. They move on to the next thing, that the TARDIS drops them somewhere in either, you know, they're left in a space that they're trying to make sense of, or quite often that they land and there's a problem happening, which is the next of the opponents that the Doctor's now going to sort that one out too.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So within a series, there were there would be sort of groups of
sort of mini
stories.
Series, right? Okay.
So I think that's a relatively unusual pattern nowadays, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it would be. Yeah.
Usually, it would be either story by story or maybe story by story with an overarching story running through a whole series, but there's been a few recently where it's done this, and I can recall being a bit surprised, you know. Okay, I recognise this pattern. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I guess so, one of the good things as well, I guess, with Russell T Davies coming back as the story runner as well, is that we're likely to see more queer and trans kind of evidence, I guess, in the... I know that Yasmin Finney is going to be the new companion.
Yeah, so I think that's been... I think in some ways it just fits really well with what I like about quite a lot of queer writing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of really amiable queer writing, there's a bit of a sort of kindness to a lot of it, but
right.
I don't know that was necessarily the tradition.
No, but it just but, when you said that, it made me think of Alice Oseman's books as well. So that's a really nice kind of era, I guess, in some ways, isn't it? And it's certainly really good to kind of see on screen and in media and in books and things like that, a kindness to it, or a kind of a positivity, yeah?
Yeah. So you had that with the House on the Cerulean Sea.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, T.J. Clune.
And it had that sort of, and in quite a lot of queer speculative fiction,
right?
That you get that. So I think Andy Buchanan's books have that kind of feel to them, it's not an anodyne kind of one. There is the sort of struggle of the world that people are living in, and the kind of issues are wrapped into it.
That's right.
But there's also this this sort of just a warmth and positivity
That's right. Hey, I was thinking maybe we should do a song. What do you think? Yeah? Another piece of music? Yeah. So the next song that I've got lined up is, I guess, in a way, a theme for, I guess, part of what we're talking about today as well. And the song's called, it's by Ray Spoon, R-A-E Spoon, a British musician called Do Whatever the Heck You Want. So we'll just play that now. Okay, talk to you again soon, Sue.
Be a man or a woman, what does that really mean? Should I be outside of it or something in between? Do whatever the heck you want, do whatever the heck you want. Don't tell anyone what the heck to do, do whatever the heck you want. Should I be an artist even after I turn 40? Should I become an accountant?
And you're back with Quilted Bananas on 106.1 FM today on the show. You've got Fiona, and that's me, and Sue on the line. Sue from the couch, out in
the
hut.
Sue from the couch.
Sue from the couch.
With snoring pugs.
With the snoring pugs, yes, yes. I can't hear the snoring, so that's pretty good, yeah.
They're very delicate right now, which is quite unusual.
Oh, they must know.
Yeah, they just keep an alert enough thing just in case anyone goes out, you know, and opens the fridge or anything that they didn't want to be out on. So speaking of kind of amiable but not unchallenging, I think you've got a TV program for us.
Yeah, I mentioned it at the top of the show that I was going to talk about Heartstopper. Now, if you haven't been living under a rock, you've probably heard about Heartstopper. It's a TV show, about teenagers falling in love, in particular two British high school boys and their friends navigating life, basically, in a British comprehensive and just generally. And there have been two series so far. It's on Netflix, and the fandom is huge for them, and particularly for the actors who are in the series, primarily Kit Connor and Joe Locke, who are the two main characters, Nick and Charlie, and for the writer of the series, whose name is Alice Oseman. So as we were just talking before about positivity in terms of queer media and particularly queer TV programs, I guess Heartstopper might seem a bit sanitised, or even it's been called the anti-euphoria. That's the Euphoria, the US show, that is a lot more raunchy, and it certainly has a lot of followings. I personally haven't seen it, but with Heartstopper, there's no swearing, there's no drugs, there's no sex. but scratch under the surface and there's so much more. And it's also deeper than just Heartstopper as well. So it's about a young guy who's gay and his boyfriend Nick, who's bisexual. And it was initially published as a graphic novel. Alice Oseman initially wrote it as a webcomic, and the first volume was published via a Kickstarter campaign after her publisher decided not to publish it. She had previously written another book, which I'll talk about in a minute, called Solitaire, about a character, a very solitary introvert called Tori Spring, and Heartstopper basically follows the story of her brother Charlie and his boyfriend, and they're alluded to in the story of Solitaire, but Heartstopper actually starts a year before the happenings in Solitaire happen. So the rest is history, really, in some ways, for Heartstopper. It started off as a webcomic. It's still published as a webcomic as well, but it's up to volume 5 in terms of printed volumes. Volume 5 comes out in December. And it's volume 1 to 3 that are the two Netflix series. But it's not just about their romance, although it's primarily known as that. It's also about trans, lesbian, and asexual, aromantic characters as well, and them particularly being the larger friend group. And the stories of the broader cast are more fleshed out in the TV series, and the two formats, either reading the graphic novel or the series, you can definitely enjoy both of them. You're certainly not going to get bored reading the graphic novel, the graphic novels, you know, if you've seen the TV series, because you find out more about their internal thoughts. There are some subtle differences in terms of what happens, but generally, sorry, I just turned my mic up just a little bit. But certainly, get a lot of enjoyment reading both of them as well. But particularly, I guess, around the second series, as I said, it's on Netflix, is about Nick's coming out and the painful layered process that it can be. And the fact that Nick realises that he's bisexual, he's only ever liked girls before, and then suddenly he starts really enjoying being around Charlie, and then suddenly he realises that actually he really wants to be more than just Charlie's best friend. And coming out as bisexual, you can kind of see in the series examples of biphobia and bi-erasure. Nick is the rugby captain. There are so many kind of examples throughout series 1 and 2 and in the graphic novels of Nick, people saying, Nick's obviously straight. You can tell that just by looking at him. And yeah, exactly. People suggesting as well, not only that, once, you know, they say, oh, you know, you're gay, and he says, well, actually, I'm bisexual, or I'm bisexual, actually. And they say, well, you just haven't realised that you're gay yet, you know. And I guess it's been kind of interesting as well, because it was Bisexual Visibility Day, I think, this past week as well. And it's been interesting to kind of see some of the a little bit more of a kind of a profile for that day as well, which I think is really nice. So, yeah. But it also kind of, with Heartstopper, examines the effect of coming out or not on the other person in the relationship, in this case, Charlie. And Charlie was somebody who had come out as gay the year before. The broader group of people at his school found out as well. They overheard one of his friends talking about it. And so he's intensely bullied, and you don't see a lot of that in the series, but you know that he just went through hell, basically, of being kind of all manner of things being said to him, being done to him, and that kind of thing, I guess. So the fact that he joins the rugby team to be closer to Nick is a huge thing for him, basically, yeah. So, but I guess what I found about Heartstopper, I guess, was that it's about bullying and what can be the long-term effects from the trauma of bullying. And in season 2, you really kind of see some of the way it kind of manifested within Charlie was he had an eating disorder and body dysmorphia, but also kind of depression and other mental health impacts as well are kind of explored within the series as well. Did you kind of feel that at all, Sue, in terms of the first season that you watch, some of the...
I think it touched on a whole lot of those, didn't it? And really the whole story is framed within that that challenge of the bullying, the expectations, the stereotyping, and people surviving and thriving through that.
Or maybe they appear to, but then the long-term bullying aspects kind of really kind of manifest, you know, a lot later. Yeah. So, which is something that I found really, really interesting. Yeah. Too. And I guess because it's not just about, I mentioned before that there are, there's a broader friend group as well, because you see in the series, the lesbian couple who are friends of theirs called Tara and Darcy, and they come out on Insta as a couple and also, you know, as lesbian. And you can see that Tara gets a whole lot of abuse online from it. And social media, particularly Instagram, is really profiled within the TV series. But it's kind of, you can see that, you know, that kind of that next move from telling your friends and then going, you know, announcing it through Insta and what can happen there and bullying, online bullying, I guess, to a certain extent, yeah.
Yeah. I think and bullying is such a challenge because really the only areas where I'm seeing at the moment kind of some good inroads and good work being done is around sort of primary school stuff. But secondary schools really do seem to struggle with that.
Yeah, exactly.
And anyone who's got something different ends up as a I won't say natural, but you know, that they're the easiest targets.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
I think that the series really has that as a sort of fundamental. This is the environment that's the starting point for the story.
Yeah. But also, I guess we were talking about how Heartstopper, and I guess I'd say it's a heartwarming kind of positive story overall. You see these people who feel very much on the outer. You've got Elle, who has moved to the girls' comprehensive after transitioning male to female, and really, you know, the friend group that she finds there, but also the friend group that she has with Nick and their friend Tao, and and Nick, I guess, eventually as well, and Tara and Darcy, and eventually other characters as well, Naomi and Felix in the second series, really kind of find a community, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an ongoing theme with Alice Oseman's work as well, is about, a strong friend group, but also that feeling very much on the outer and being different from everyone else, I guess, too.
Yeah. And a community in that diversity of you know, people that are on the outer, who's recognised and sort of accept each other where that's not necessarily. So certainly seen that in young people here, that they're quite strong in those relationships with each other, much more so than I think was necessarily the case when I was when I was younger. It's made this generation, or the sort of generation of teenagers and slightly older, you know, people in their 20s, quite different.
Yeah, exactly. And I think too, the one of the things that you'll find on The Guardian, for example, and other articles as well. People have talked about Heartstopper as being the TV series that they wish that they'd had when they were at school, something that made them feel like, you know, they weren't the only one who felt these ways. And particularly, just to mention as well, is that in the show and in Alice Oseman's books as well, there's, you know, representation of somebody in the TV show. It's a character called Isaac, who's not in the webcomic, who's asexual and aromantic. And it's about Isaac's journey as well, in terms of understanding that he doesn't feel attraction in a world that, you know, is completely, you know, sidetracked by romance and sexual relationships, for example, and how to find your own community, I guess, or your own sense of self, I guess, you know, when there's so much pressure on there. So I think that's a really nice way as well.
So I just saw in Wikipedia that Alice Oseman herself is asexual, aromantic.
She is, yeah.
Which I think it's fascinating that really one of the most strongest sort of romantic stories that we're seeing on television, queer romantic stories, is written by sort of almost by someone who's observing from a different position.
And she has talked quite a lot about that as well, in terms of, you know, really enjoying reading romantic fiction and coming to her own realization. And I think it's kind of, you know, just thinking about the wider group of books that she's put out. You know, the first book I mentioned before, called Solitaire, which was about Charlie Spring's sister Tori. You know, she said that, and it's a wonderful book. I've just read it again for the second time just recently. And it's about, you know, Tori, who feels completely separate from the rest of her peer group, and, you know, as Alice Oseman said, is that at the time that she wrote it, and she wrote it when she was still at school, you know, she didn't have those words for how she herself was. And in fact, you know, in volume 5, you know, Tori will be identified as aromantic asexual. So, and it's kind of interesting to kind of see the discussion about, you know, friends and the pressure from other people to kind of be in relationships, which you can see in Solitaire as well too. So, yeah, so it's kind of interesting to kind of read those updates of how different the books have evolved over the years. And she's written others, novellas as well. There's one called This Winter, which is about Christmas time for Tori and Nick and Charlie, and another one called Nick and Charlie itself, which actually takes place in the future from the web comics, basically, when Nick is deciding what university to, or he's basically preparing to go off to university. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting how these books have kind of evolved over the years as well. And her book Radio Silence is another one, which was born from Heartstopper as well. So it's all part of that same Heartstopper universe, and the story of Frances and her friend Allard, who turns up in the webcomic, and the podcast he produces secretly, which gains a huge following. These books are all young adult, and I just read a stat this morning that said that 55% of readers of young adult are adults themselves, which is just incredible, really. But it's really got universal appeal, and I guess that's the thing, is that, you know, Heartstopper can be read, can be watched by people up to their, you know, their dotage, as well as by young adults as well too. So, which is really nice, yeah. But yeah, I guess in some ways, I guess for me, I guess I found it a real comfort to watch it and to read some of these books as well. It kind of takes you away from the day-to-day reality of what's going on. And yeah, I can feel myself. I don't know if you were ever in this, Sue, but I was certainly very much in the Buffyverse, as it was during the Buffy eras. So I can feel my Osmanverse, or my Heartstopper universe, kind of, as you know, tingly feelings as well in terms of, you know, the how much I do enjoy reading it. So I have talked quite a lot about it just now, but Alice herself is very much part of the community. She's active on Insta, but particularly on Tumblr as well, as Creative Introvert is the profile there. Very much interacts with people, reblogs, you know, the fan art as well. But yeah, so Sue, I know we've only played two pieces of music, but we're getting down to the wire. It's 6 minutes and 46 before we finish up. So tell us, we'll put links to the different things that we've talked about.
Yeah.
We'll put those up on Facebook. But Sue, it's not giving you much time to talk about your second thing.
That's okay, because in some ways it can be done very quickly, this one. So... there's a couple of other ones that I've been enjoying, the podcasts made by comedians, and it's interesting that you've got, you know, the podcast as part of the story in your
in Radio Silence, yeah,
and it's part of the story in the Doctor Who Redacted, but their podcasters that are.
Right.
So it's not directly about the Doctor, it's about the podcasters who are making a program about the Doctor. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of ones that are done by comedians. One is Hanson, who has, amongst other things, Tig Notaro. That one, I haven't really clicked with to the same extent, and it may just be my headspace. But the one that's got me is called Secret Dinosaur Cult. It's two comedians whose names, of course, immediately elude me.
What's it called?
Secret Dinosaur Cult.
Secret Dinosaur Cult. Gosh, that's a great name.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a song. It kind of goes "Secret Dinosaur Cult," "Secret Dinosaur Cult." Yeah. They are two comedians who do a lot of stage work, and the programs are, I think, recorded at stage.
Jodie Mitchell and Sophie Hagen.
Jodie Mitchell and Sophie Hagen.
Sophie Hagen.
Mm-hmm. Sophie Hagen is a Danish bisexual woman.
Mm-hmm.
And Jodie Mitchell is a English lesbian woman. They follow, it's quite unusual in that they follow exactly the same pattern for all the ones that I've listened to so far. So they start off with a story about terrible things they've done. For which they seek forgiveness. Some of those are pretty hilarious. They then move to the things they've done this week to try and replace the missing fathers in your life, because both of them had, I think, two and three respectively fathers who left. So this is, you know, what did you do to fill your daddy hole, those tend to be a little bit, I don't know, that's necessarily the strongest part of it. And then they have a dinosaur that they've chosen that they talk about a bit and frame quite often an issue or, you know, the sort of main body topic around this dinosaur, so that sort of blends in with the dinosaur. So what have we got? For example, Kentrosaurus and Kink. And they are known Nikus and Housemate.
Mm-hmm.
Allosaurus in the church.
Sounds like an interesting kind of framing frame in for different episodes,
So it uses the same, it's the same pattern, and obviously, you know, being sort of from a from sort of live shows and being tuned out at quite the rate. You know, some of it's stronger than others, but the stuff that's strong is just is both hilarious and kind of amiable. So it's sort of amiable, outrageous, nonsense, or occasionally hilarious.
Sounds amazing.
And just consistently funny, and mm-hmm. it's just I find that's a really good sort of wind down one, just because it's silly.
That sounds brilliant. So that's Secret Dinosaur Cult, if you look on your normal podcast.
Secret Dinosaur Cult.
Secret Dinosaur Cult. There we go.
They're not new, or the recordings aren't new. So those early ones are from 2018. The latest ones are from 2020. But they may have. It may be that they've only been put up there recently. But anyway,
right. So something to look for. Now we've got less than a minute left, Sue. So we better. Start winding down. Sue, what were you going to say?
Tell us about Glamophones Concert.
Oh, yes, Glamophones Concert, Saturday the 28th of October at 3 p.m. Everlasting Love, I think, is the title of it. It sits at Andrew's on the Terrace. Tickets via Event Finder, or if you know somebody from the Glamophones, you can get tickets, which is really good. And we'll put a poster up as well. We'll include a link to the Queer Joy survey that's being run by Massey at the moment. So thanks a lot for everyone for listening to us, for Sue and I talking about our fandoms, and have a great day, rest of the day. We'll talk to you next.
The Quilted Bananas program plays every Sunday, 10 to 11 a.m. with news, views and music.
A collective of presenters, advertisers, community events and discusses news of interest to lesbians, queer women and non-binary folk.
We have interviews about past and future sports and cultural events, politics, films, art shows.
The program is sponsored through the generosity of the Rural Foundation.
And it plays every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m. on Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.